Techno Progressivo. You are listening to Techno Progressivo on 101.9 CITR in Vancouver.
Welcome to Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Waugh, and you're listening to 101.9 CITR here in Vancouver. I'm proud to work and live on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I've got an excellent interview feature on tap for you this evening with Toronto's Glenn Morrison, another great taste of Canadian talent on display, and we will get to that shortly, but first, let's check out this episode's track of the week. This is a great disco track from Electric Disco and Dr. Packer. It's My Lovin'. Okay, an amazing track of the week there. Dr. Packer and Electric Disco serve up a beautiful slice of disco. My Lovin' takes us all the way back to the 70s. That's out now on Fool's Paradise and can be had wherever you buy your tracks. On to the feature for tonight's episode. This is the first of 2 hours with Glenn Morrison. He's had an impact on the scene with his unique prog house stylings. He's had a prolific career of 20 plus years, and I'm taking a bit of a different approach with this one. Generally, I play 12 or more artist tracks for interview episodes, but I felt like he gave me so much interview-wise, and I really wanted to showcase the tracks, which really are Voyage tracks, so I've included four tracks per half here to allow you to enjoy the musicianship on offer. Here we talk history, inspiration, and the joy of experimenting in the studio. The lead track here is titled Dance of Time, and full track list and a selection of Glenn Morris and web links can be found on Techno Progressivo's Facebook page.
Thank you.
This is DJ Waugh speaking to Glenn Morrison. He's been producing and DJing for almost 20 years and continues to do so to this day. He is a multi-platinum selling composer and producer with a Canadian Billboard number one record titled Goodbye, multiple Juno Award nominations, SoCan and Sirius FM Awards, as well as 31 pages of tracks on Beatport. He has clearly made his mark on the scene. With gigs all over the world, he's held residencies at Amnesia and Space in Ibiza, Marquee, Rain and Moon in Vegas, Pasha in Argentina, Space Miami, and Avalon in Los Angeles. He has collaborated alongside the likes of David Morales, Dusty Kid, Dave Seaman, Danny Howells, Ewan Pearson, Colin Benders, and on and on and on. Releases on a number of iconic labels, Bedrock, Huge Tunes, Black Hole, Armada, Sony Music, Global Underground, and his own Fall From Grace Records round out his resume. Additionally, he helms three other labels, Dying Light, Ambient Wave, and Wolf, each showcasing a different brand of music. His tracks have been front and center in progressive house, melodic techno, and trance for the past two decades. His most recent release is titled Sunrise in Napoli alongside friend Frank Sonic, and that dropped in late March and is available on his Fall From Grace label. It's my pleasure to be speaking to him. This is Glenn Morrison. So currently, how do you define your sound, and how would you say it's evolved or shifted over time?
You know, when it comes to the sound of music and what I'm doing, I guess you could say I've been a professional musician since I was quite young, because I was playing classical piano and I was in competitions with judges and all that stuff. So that kind of got me used to the idea of performing to people. And then from classical, it then evolved in my high school years to electronic music. I was listening to a lot of like Adam Beyer, techno drum code stuff. It was on tapes, like cassette tapes at that time. There was no internet, nothing like this to share. It was like through friends, they would give you mixtapes and cassette tapes. So there was that. There was also Oakenfold, a lot of like Paul Oakenfold stuff. It was very influential and inspiring to me at that time. So a lot of his essential mixes in China, a lot of the global underground stuff too, with Sasha and Digweed and all that music from that period. That was very inspiring. My sound, it is an extension of all of that, really, from whether it's classical piano, ambient music, downtempo, or 4/4 club. There always, I guess, is an overarching glaze of melody that comes from, I guess, my background and all that. You know, I do also like things minimalistic as well. Like my mood really changes depending on what the projects are on the table. Like I guess a 3, 6, 12 month plan. I was doing pop music for quite a while as well. That was a great experience, and I had great success in that way. I still work with Sony and have a great relationship in that with that world and doing all that kind of music. But at the moment, you know, yeah, I've been really, you mentioned Sunrise in Napoli and with Frank Sonic, and you know, a lot of my friends I'm releasing music with right now, collaborating a lot, writing originals. I'm not really doing very many remixes because I feel like if my time is best spent doing these kind of live jam sessions, the way that I'm working now is very different than it was, you know, 15 or 20 years ago. For when it comes to producing electronic music back in the day, it was more like I was kind of learning a lot of different styles of production, working with friends, going to the School of Hard Knocks. So I didn't go to formal training for Trevis or, you know, Harris or any Berkeley, anything like that. It was more like using my Royal Conservatory background and all my piano knowledge, and then learning with friends how to produce records. And then over time, it's gotten to the point now where, you know, when you put your hours in and, you know, years go by, you get better in different things. So what I've done now is kind of migrate my creative writing process to away from the computer. It's pretty much all live. So when there's synthesizers, it's all outboard synthesizers, and I'm automating by hand, modulating by hand. I have my modular wall, which is where everything is with sequencers, and I can even, you know, tune the kick drum, and all the drums are by hand as well as the synthesizers. So a lot of that is like breeding ground for creating new music. But right now, primarily, I've been doing a lot of classical piano recordings. So I have like a Chopin album that came out recently. Keeping myself jumping between different styles makes things progress further. You know, you get better instead of just being the one trick pony that does the same sound over and over again.
Yo, this is Boys Noise.
This is DJ Linus.
This is Andy Clockwork.
This is DJ Leanne.
This is Ian Howie.
Hey, what's up? This is Sid, and you're listening to Techno Progressivo.
Okay, how did you establish yourself as a DJ and producer? Is that something you did within Toronto, or did you go globally almost immediately? And was there a point in there where you realized that this was no longer just a passion or an interest and had turned out to be a legitimate career for you? And what was that like?
I was working at Release Records. I happened to be so fortunate to live in the same city that was essentially the North American version, the gateway of all European promos. So at that time, pre-MP3s and digital world, it was like $1 million-plus vinyl business. That was downtown Toronto. So I basically begged, you know, the owners of the store, like I was buying records every week, but then I was like, can I just do my community service hours for high school? I need 40 hours or something, right? So I asked if I could just work free, get my 40 hours. And then I did that. And then I got paid in records, but I was only allowed 2 records of the week before, not the current week. And then I wound up to the normal week. And then I got paid an hourly. And I worked my way up really from nothing. And from that perspective, you know, it was very rewarding because I was doing the box orders for anybody from Tiesto to Hernan Cattaneo to Oakenfold. I was sometimes meeting these guys as well in real life. They'd come into the shop when they were playing in Toronto. So all of this was like very part of the fundamental beginning. And I'm very grateful to a couple of the owners of Release. Even to this day, Mitch, he runs a label called Microcastle based out of Canada, very internationally respected. Mitch is an amazing A&R and he was my former boss. So that was the era I came from. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a very exciting time. It was like pre-commercial. It wasn't really like, it was still, it was like turntables. I was in by the time I was in my third year university, I was getting gigs around the world. So I was playing in Brazil, China, Turkey, Norway, London, all these random one-off gigs. And it wasn't really like big money. It was more like, yeah, you know, you have your expenses taken care of and there's a little bit of money on top afterwards, you know, if you don't go crazy on expenses. And it was like very modest, but in the third year, fourth year, I could see that the gigs were happening more and more. I was producing records at that time and learning with working with a lot of different friends, collaborating with friends. And then I started to get some great record success at that time, which really helped me. So I started to get on vinyl. Like I know Nick Warren Remix, one of my originals on his label Hope. And I was like maybe 20 or 21. So having Nick Warren Remix me on his label really helped. And working with Joel with Dead Mouse on Mousetrap, we did a whole bunch of records together. That was helpful. And then Tiesto, of course, helped a lot with the In Search of Sunrise, and one thing led to another and another and another. And then, you know, to this day, yeah, I'm very grateful for the way that my life kind of played out. It was just, the idea was to constantly make a lot of music and hopefully it be high quality and hopefully it resonate with people. And that's really where everything started for me. We'll be right back.
Okay, let's keep talking about production a little bit here. You mentioned that you're moving a lot of your stuff to outboard gear. At this stage, are you even using a DAW, or is it mostly just outside of the box?
Yeah, I do. In terms of like, I work with, I love Ableton. I mean, I've learned and worked on so many over the years, from Cubase to Reason to Pro Tools to Logic to Ableton. And in the end, I used to do mixing and mastering with Pro Tools and creating and composing with Ableton. And then I just got so familiar with the hotkeys of Ableton, and saw they also had a lot of stuff that helped me with clocking to sync up my modular and do multi-tracking into my main computer. So the DAW is Ableton, and it's primarily used for recording in. You know, when it comes to composing ideas and new music, I've got my MIDI for my keyboards, and I can do chords, melodies, riffs, all that, sequencing, all that. But then I'm using it primarily as a way to just record in. And then when it comes to mixing and mastering, I use all my outboard gear. So I very rarely use VSTs. I think the only ones, you know, that I couldn't live without would be like a de-esser. So I use the Weiss de-esser, which is great for vocals. And it's a one-to-one from what used to be, you know, the DKM 1M3, whatever the Weiss is. It's like $10,000, $12,000 back in the day for one outboard. Now it's a plug-in for $500. And you know what I'm saying? You know, Soft Sound Toys is good too. They have like Echo Boy, and there's like good effects and stuff, but I have an Eventide. I have an outboard Eventide Eclipse. So I have a rack mount Eventide. So, and then when it comes to reverb, the East West has some cool stuff, but like when I have all the real outboard and I'm physically touching the gear, it just feels better. And it sounds, I'm using my ears. I'm not looking at, you know, little knobs on a computer monitor. Like that was the old way. And I feel like it was a very restrictive way of making music. And I'm used to being a piano player where I'm playing on a keyboard, you know, to capture that spirit, but with using unique sounds. You know, sometimes with VSTs, there's another problem with VSTs is, let's say you buy Spectrasonic, so Omnisphere. It's great and everything, but unless you're super techie, then you're just scrolling through presets for hours, and everybody else in the world has the same presets you do. So it becomes very soulless, where you're like just clicking random patches. But that's how I was feeling. Everybody's different, entitled to their own feelings, but that's how I felt. So by physically removing myself from the computer, then I'm like, okay, I have, you know, my Black Corp synth, I have Moog Voyager synth, I have a Nord synth, and I have this massive modular wall with many different little synths from the modules. And then how can I, you know, run that through my own filters, my own reverbs? It really customizes everything. Do you know what I mean? And my own sequencers, you know, controlled randomization. You can make things really customized. Maybe you can do the same thing in computers. I just haven't been taught that way. It's not how I learned. And I had a lot of different people over there. Even up until including like my modular, when COVID hit, there was no touring for anybody, right? The world was shuttered for touring. So I figured I wanted to keep my brain active, and I learned what is modular and how to make electronic music in a modular wall. And that was very difficult. I had to have private lessons still to this day. Like every quarter or half year, I have another lesson. And you know, the woman that teaches me, she's a professor and teaches modular design at like Ryerson University in Toronto. She's very, very smart. So she's a great teacher. Who do you want to work with that can, you know, help teach you and help make you further grow? I think my new records are better than all my old ones, but that's just because of time, right? Like you put so much time in and care that, you know, hopefully there's good things that come from all that time that gets put in, right?
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
You are listening to the Glenn Morrison interview here on Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Waugh, and the station is 101.9 CITR. That half of the interview wrapped up with his track Beyond the Pale, a collaboration with Peter Dundup on the remix. Full tracklist and a selection of Glenn Morrison weblinks can be found on Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. Part 2 kicks off with the track Into the Deep. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about that modular synth. You said you are receiving instruction for this, but it looks incredibly complicated. So when you have a sound in your head that you know that you want to make, are you able to play around with all the plugs, dials, and knobs on that device and get it to come out?
That's a great question, and I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen in the modular, and that's the beauty of it. Like, I know there's some guys that are very adept and very, very technically intelligent to think about how they want to come to a certain point. So you see guys like Colin Benders, they can play live, full sets, completely brand new live, and that's really impressive. I cannot do that. I'm at the stage of modular where I can create amazing sequences and modulations and chords and riffs and sounds, but then what I'm doing is I'm rendering all that into the computer, so into my Ableton. I'm rendering that in all the modulars coming in as multi-tracks. I have everything separated, not like one audio of the song. It's everything broken up. I render all of that, and then I clean that up, cut it up, edit it, and then that forms the songs. So there is a little bit of work that's involved with, like, we'll call it in the box, you know, in the computer, but it's mostly editing, arranging. Yeah, mostly editing and arranging and tweaking. That's, you know, mixing, mastering, of course. I'll do everything in from outboard gear, but it goes back into the computer. There, but the composing is all kind of live jam sessions. So, you know, it could be 30 minutes, could be an hour, could be two. And I just take the best bits that come from that. Sometimes things get really weird when you take a patch out and then, or even one cable, if you change one micro or macro parameter, everything can change for the better or for the worse. So, like, I'm not at the stage where, like, oh man, I would never do this live. That would be the most boring show ever because I'm just not capable. You know, there's a handful of people that I think are capable to carry live modular, but it's very difficult, right? So that the challenge is what excites me. Plus, again, combined with my traditional, you know, outboard synthesizers, you can make wonderful melodies and tones. You know, I guess the question you're kind of digging at too is, I think, you know, with the modular, it looks complicated, and it is. But Rome isn't built in a day, right? So I'm never hard on myself. I've made huge gains over the last 3 or 4 years since I had, you know, the modular system being built and installed and all that. I created one module at a time. So there's a certain point where you plateau. It's like, okay, I have more than enough. If I can't make good music in this, then I have a problem. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like I need to learn my rig more before even considering getting another module, if that makes any sense. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is John Delirious.
Hi, this is Alfie Sandusky.
Hey, what's up? This is Darren Epsilon.
Hey, this is Adam K.
This is Jay Tripwire.
Hi, this is John Aquaviva, and you're listening to Techno Progressivo.
Okay, given the size of your body of work and the length of time that you've been doing this, do you ever feel like you're tapped for inspiration, or does it come to you quite easily? And when you are making tracks, do you typically hear these melodies and things like that in your head in advance, or are you generally sitting down at the computer playing around and seeing what happens there?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think really the best way to think of how I approach songwriting today, and the process was different 15 or 20 years ago, or 10 or 5, but like right now, it's very much just like I want to sit down, come up with some memorable chords, riffs, harmonies, work with some really cool high-end synthesizers or module, make it unique, make the sound design unique. And there's no drums usually when I start now. So usually it's like if I create something really melodious and or catchy minus drums, then I throw the drums in later. It's mostly about like how do I bring a unique voice to my compositions? What is it, like, you know, you listen to so much music on Beatport and it's just a spitting copy of the other. And it's like whether it's today's flavor of the month is these LFO breakdowns where there's just like do 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 do. It's like on every kind of afterlife sounding record. And there's, you know, people like to copy trends and what's hot at the moment and blah blah blah. For me, I'm not even thinking at all about what's going on out there. I'm thinking about what do I enjoy chord wise. Mix it up. Don't do the same chords. You know, push the boundaries. Change the scale itself. It doesn't have to be just major or minor. It could also be Lydian or Phrygian. It could be different types of scales. that could entice good melody patterns and rhythmic patterns. So that's where I'm at mentally. And then when I have a good idea, I'll sift through the batch. Like, there's no such thing as like writer's block. It's just you have good days and bad days. And sometimes really good art comes and some days it doesn't. And you just have to approach it like, well, if my job is to make music, I should be in the studio every day, or at least try to be every day or 5 days a week or whatever. Treat it like a job. And then every week I should have at least a couple good songs, whatever stage of completion, but I should have a couple great pieces of work throughout all my week. And I should also have a trash bin where you can separate all the stuff that isn't good enough. You have your A bin, which is like, oh, this is a great idea, it should be finished or executed or released. You have your B bin, which is, oh, this is a good idea, but it needs work. And then you have the trash bin and there's nothing else. Like, that's how I frame it when I'm working. My output is always high because it's just the frame of mind. The goal here is just to try my best to create memorable art and music. Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a lot of fun still 20 years later doing this stuff. I mean, all my new stuff, it's very exciting to me. I'm very excited to see where things go. You know, I'm a musician. I hope you enjoy what I'm doing. And I try to be as professional as I can.
Okay, let's take a look at your Fall from Grace label. It looks to be about 8 years old. What would you say is the musical policy for it, and how has the process of running it been going?
Wonderful. Thank you for asking. Wonderful experience. I've been in the record label business since release records. So my first label was Morrison Recordings, and I would have been around, 17 or 18 when I started that. And primarily it was like down-tempo, trip-hop, really chilled out ambient kind of music. I think I had like 4 tracks on Nick Warren's Global Underground Paris compilation on the disc 1. So, you know, a lot lot of guys were helping me, and I was acting as an A&R in a way, curating, you know, what I thought was good electronic music. So Fall From Grace is just an extension of what initially Morrison Recordings was, but it was consolidated and we split up the label group into different labels depending on the style of music, right? So Fall From Grace is underground. It's got a very melodic techno kind of sound to it. There's a lot of artists on this label as well. David Morales, Darren Emerson, Dave Seaman, you know, Camel Fat. A lot of great, wonderful musicians, all very different in their own way. All of them are pushing the envelope. They are all contributing to the electronic pot that we live in. So for me, I'm just very grateful to be able to represent this kind of catalog, these kind of artists. And, you know, A&R is a fun game. It's a lot of fun to find music that's unsigned, whether it's from an established artist or a nobody. It really makes no difference what the size of artist is. I never cared about that. I still don't care about that. It's about the art. And if the music is good, hopefully it resonates with people. So that's really what Fall From Grace was. You know, it's 8 or 9 years running. I'm so happy with the catalog. I think the best is yet to come. We're still constant. We have our new double pack vinyl, our X-ray series limited edition vinyl. It's like two times different colors vinyls. There's Mark Romboy, David Morales, Hermanez, Guy Barone, Batoko, myself, Dusty Kidd, Danny Howells, Dave Seaman. It's like so much good music, all new music too. I don't really like living in the past, repressing old records. So once in a while, it's nice to remix something old, but we're, you know, for the most part, we're doing a lot of original music, trying to shy away from tons of remixes. Mostly original music is what we're pushing for.
A stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
We are all done for another episode of Techno Progressivo. Thank you so much to Glenn Morrison for agreeing to interview. This was part one of the interview, and I really hope you had a chance to dive into the tracks. Part two will feature next week, and we can hear more great music and what he has to say. Glenn Morrison's track House on Fire closed out the interview. Full tracklist and a selection of his web links can be found at Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. Head over there to find out more about the mind behind the music. If you've enjoyed the show and want to hear it again, visit the Techno Progressivo show page at citr.ca. SiriusXM.ca or Apple Podcasts to give this one another spin or to hear more great guest mixes and interviews from days gone by. Keep up to date with Techno Progressivo. Follow our socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud. Attic Jams is up next on the station. Stick around to see what they've got in store for you tonight. Before we go, let's do as we always do and set the controls in the time machine for this episode's track from the past. For this one, we're going to hop back 12 years in time to 2012 to showcase some techno. Umek teams up with Olivier Giacomoto. This one is called The Sound. Sasha Karasi does the honors with the remix. Enjoy this, and I will see you back here next time.